Way back when I was thinking about starting a high-ticket dropshipping business, the one thing I was looking for was someone to show me what one of these sites looks like. So John and I have done that for you at dropshipbreakthrough.com/go. So head to dropshipbreakthrough.com/go and watch the free training.
Welcome to the Dropship Podcast, where you'll learn how to build and grow a high-ticket dropshipping business and hear stories from successful e-commerce entrepreneurs. Let's kick this thing off. Hey, welcome to the Dropship Podcast. We are trying something new today. This is the first time John and I have ever been in a room together recording a podcast. So we have multiple cameras. We've got a screen set up. I'm a little confused right now, if I'm honest with you, but I'm excited because it's been 7 years since we sat next to each other in general, but we were able to sit next to each other this week for Dropship Breakthrough Live, which was incredibly fun. And now we're sitting next to each other trying a different podcast setup. If you've never seen us before, which we found out at the event, and most people don't know this, we're on video. So you can check us out on YouTube. You can check us out on Spotify, or I don't know if we show up anywhere else, but those are the two places I would recommend. Definitely Spotify is somewhere we're trying to increase viewership, as well as YouTube. So if you want to see us on video, check us out on Spotify or YouTube.
Yeah, right on, man. This is pretty fucking wild, hey?
Yeah, this is definitely wild. Yeah,
you're way bigger in person, I gotta say.
We heard that a lot at the event of like, well, you specifically, right? Like, I don't think you come off as, you're taller than me, right? I'm 6'3", almost 6'4", and yeah. I'm looking up to you.
Yeah, I know. So many ways.
Jesus.
All right, what are we talking about today? Niche, bad niche.
Yeah, today, back to the fun game show we like playing, good niche, bad niche, niche. This one's about red light therapy, which is something I have dabbled in myself. I think I have a little bit of knowledge in. I have some life experiences with it as well, but I've heard it on quite a few phone calls lately. I don't know about you, on sales calls, this seems to come up a lot as far as really wellness in general, but red light therapy seems to come up inside of that.
What is red light therapy?
You know, I don't think I could give you the science back definition of what it's actually doing in your body, but it's pretty trendy at the moment, right? So are infrared saunas, so is cold plunges. It's kind of all in that niche, if you will, of wellness at the moment. When I started the business I was starting, I was inside a room of people trying to be the best in the world at what they were doing. People, big names, I'll just say that. And they were looking for any slight way that they could get better, that they could get 1% better. Because a 1% gain in their life is,
it's
magnified, right? It's massive. And so whether it was, listening to Andrew Huberman, who says you could sit in a sauna 4 days a week at 170 degrees plus for 20 minutes of time and lower your all-cause mortality by 50%, which is a cool stat, or whether that's, increasing your intake of red light, or whether that is getting out in the morning and getting sunlight as the first thing in your eyes, or whether that was activating your heat shock proteins in a sauna, or whatever the inverse of that is in a cold plunge. They were all about it. Everyone in that room was all about it. And so that's what got me into it. As far as the science behind it, I actually think that's something we'll probably end up talking about today, of whether we should be making some of the claims that are made online in red light therapy if you're going to sell this stuff.
Yeah. And I think I think you're right. At the moment, a lot of people's minds, when they come in and they start thinking about what should I sell, what product should I sell, or, what interest should I serve, their mind automatically goes to what's like trendy. Do you know what I mean? Like what's hot. And to me, if we're talking about like good niche, bad niche, for me, when I'm doing this, that's like automatically one of my red flags. So I never, like I'm talking about me personally, I never go for what I think is trendy. If you think back over the years, you think about like things like drones, infrared saunas is definitely one, e-bikes, right? Would you do any of these niches?
Currently, no. Certainly they interested me back then as well, but I was a beginner, right? And I'm not sure I knew the criteria through which we view niches now that we, that are in Dropship Breakthrough.
Yeah. And so there's a few reasons why I take that approach. It's usually just a red flag for me. I love to go for things that are more established, that have gone through their explosive trend hump, because everything does that, right? It goes up. Every new product goes down at some point. Like it just goes down in popularity and then it usually over time stabilizes. So products that have been in the market for say 20 years or something like that, they've gone through that whole up and down, super unpredictable. The other thing you see with that up and down is like a lot of suppliers crash and burn. And so we saw this with e-bikes, right? There's been a whole bunch of suppliers, manufacturers who came into that space really quickly because it was super popular with just really shitty products, right? Had heaps of, warranty issues that weren't backed up. And for the dropshippers in that space, that left them in a tight spot, right? And so that's one of the things I try to avoid. But also what you find with sort of trendy products these days is a lot of the brands will go straight to direct to customer, direct to consumer, right? Because that's currently the trendy thing to do when you have a new product, you know what I mean? And so I think as somebody who's trying to enter into that market dropshipping, it can be a bit tougher, you know, to get some suppliers, get your foot in the door. So to me, it just automatically kind of puts me off for those sort of reasons.
Have you ever heard the term consolidation when it comes to e-commerce?
No.
I think what happens when you look at trendy things. I'll use eBay as an example. I live in a small town about 45 minutes west of here. We're in Minneapolis currently, and there are multiple e-bike manufacturers near me. Yep. There is hundreds at this point. And so at some point, consolidation will happen where all of the brands will consolidate down to a few that are established. I think Red Light Therapy is going through this currently too. We were just looking on my Mac here beforehand. There's a lot of brands I'd never heard of. And I was just doing this research a year ago. And so I think there's all these brands that pop up. You're fascinated and thrilled with what you found when you're doing the research. And then you get in there and you find out, oh, these guys have been around for like 6 months, or I'm not selling this brand or this brand or this brand or this brand. Oh, wait, when I just got an order for this brand, I called them and their number's out of service, right? Because consolidation is going to happen at some point. I think there's a lot of people running for that cash grab and throwing up businesses, as they should, right? If they actually know what they're doing. But it turns out most people don't know what they're doing. Most businesses fail, honestly. And so I don't think consolidation has happened in some of these newer industries. Whereas if you look at some of the products that we see some of our best students selling, it's from industries that are well established. They've been around a very long time. The manufacturers who are in that industry are not even looking to sell direct to consumer because the one thing they're good at is making a fantastic product, and they look for people just like us to sell their products.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, we were looking at some of the brands in the red light therapy space that you had seen in your research, and you were like, they were automatically a no to drop shipping, right?
Yeah, the direct to consumer ones are interesting. So, Juve is a big name in that space. I met those guys at a mastermind. If I'm dead honest, they didn't shut up the entire time. They were kind of like, I was like, shut the fuck up. I want to hear the guy who's speaking, you know? It was a little annoying. I'm just being honest. And then, they are direct-to-consumer only, I believe. And then some of the other brands that I think are actually making a much, much better product than Juve, who has the biggest name, they didn't want anyone to sell them either. And so I had friends, like, close with them, close with me, make recommendations, make introductions, and it didn't seem to matter. I wasn't getting them on board. And so, yeah, what for me, like the direct to consumer ones are interesting because it's so fresh. There's so many of them popping up. But like if a new brand is coming out and they're dead set on direct to consumer, there's not much you can do.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I think to me, once again, that's something that puts me off this sort of product. It's just like kind of if you've got a list of ideas and you've got a product that's, you know, like red light therapy, that kind of new and trendy thing, and it's kind of just really taking off versus more established ideas, you're kind of just setting yourself up for a harder path than it needs to be, because you're obviously one of the first things you're going to go out and you're going to go out and you're going to call suppliers. That's one of your first steps. So if you're automatically giving yourself a hard time there, or a potentially hard time, versus another idea which you're going to be dealing with much more established suppliers who have gone through the consolidation phase that you mentioned, you're just going to have an easier path. And it's really that opening bit. Somebody asked me the other day at our live event, like, where do you see, at what stage of the whole process of building and running a high-ticket dropshipping business do you see people drop out? And I thought about, you know, people who come into our program, like people who quit, basically, because they, you know, feel like they're struggling. Heaps of people go through and pick a product. And then you see a big gap between people and build a website. And then that's tends to be where you don't hear from people anymore. Mm. It's because they're coming up to the supply calls. And yep, a lot of people are fearful of that. They don't go through with it for that reason. But I think some people make their task there a bit harder than it needs to be by picking something that's going to be more difficult to get suppliers. And so that's why I like to go for those more established products, or the unsexy products, right? Because those suppliers, you know, they're just going to be a little bit easier to get across the line, and you're not going to get those automatic barriers of, no, we don't do drop shipping at all.
Yeah.
Right. Like they've heard it all before. They know how to deal with it. It's going to be usually an easier call. They're going to know what they want to ask you. They know what they've got to give you to get you set up and all of that sort of thing. And so I think just, yeah, for that reason as well, with some of these new products, you kind of set yourself up for a tough path.
But let's talk about what we do like, right? So there's a reason I like this. I think if you can find an industry, golf's a good example. I was in golf. A golfer, a specific golfer, not all of the avatars, but a specific golfer will pay any amount of money to get one stroke better at their game. I like industries like that, right? And so if red light therapy falls into that for some people, that they'll pay any amount of money to gain that little bit of edge, or even if it's, you know, potentially woo-woo and they're not actually getting an edge, but they're convincing themselves they're getting an edge, they'll still pay whatever it costs to get that. So that's easy to like. Some of the price points are easy to like. I know when we searched it earlier, we found tanning bed style red light therapy, which was like $5,000, right? Or these huge units that were $3,000 versus just the, you know, you often see the panels of red lights. I've been in where we winter in Florida. There is a cryotherapy place. It's kind of a wellness place. And so we did cryotherapy, and then they brought us into a room, a very small room, but it had red lights all around you. So you just kind of stood in the room and absorbed the red light. I think the panels are a little low. They can get high enough. But some of the bigger units were interesting. So, like, there's a lot to like here. I can see why people would be interested in this. But I think when you dig down deep, you're going to end up with some of the problems that we referenced at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, and I think if we took the approach that some other people take with niche selection and just made it about the product, which is a huge mistake, which we've talked about many times on this show, the product itself, yeah. There's products in this space that tick all the boxes of what you would want in a product. You know, they're expensive. Probably not too difficult to ship a lot of them. And it's got that cool little B2B element to it as well, right? So you've got all these small businesses that are popping up now buying, like, you know, they might buy 3 or 4 of those bed type devices. Right. That's a good thing to have in a market. For me anyway, I like to see that. I like to say I could sell this to an individual, or I could sell 3 or 4 to a new small business, because new small businesses, the great thing about them is they go through the customer journey very much like a B2C customer, as opposed to like a large organization, which has a very different customer journey. Mm. Do you know what I mean? They go through a different process to buy products. Small businesses, it's just like a guy like you or me. He's like, fuck, I'm really into this. I want to start a business around it because I know other people are into it. Where am I going to get products from? They just go straight onto Google every time, and they look at shopping ads. They look at organic search results, which is exactly the sort of marketing that we do for customers. And so you don't really have to change a lot to capture both of those groups. They're probably also personally passionate about the thing they're doing too, right? So they still fit your B2C avatar. They're kind of the same person, right? Usually.
So I think one other thing that I do kind of want to bring up here is internally this like sits wrong with me.
Yeah.
Like, so I sold saunas at one point, and Clear Light, I think, was the only brand who wasn't lying about their EMF testing. And so you can have your views on whether you think EMF is a bad thing, whether we just, it's all around us, which it is. But it didn't sit right with me that we're kind of setting guidelines saying this amount of EMF is good. And magically everybody fell underneath that line. But when it was third party tested by multiple people, you know, posting on their YouTube channel, things like that, everyone was lying except for Clear Light. And so I think in this red light space, just knowing the guy I know, Awaken for Wellness, they have one in St. Paul, one in Minneapolis, one in where my office is in Wisconsin. He's making his own, and he's the nerdy guy who gets all the concept. Well, he needs someone like us to sell his product, but he understands the product, and he's telling me all these things of like, these brands that are out there are absolutely lying about this, and this. Again, stuff that's way over my head. He thinks that's what people want in marketing is those terms they don't write. They want the afterstate. So he could use some help with marketing, but he gets the product. And so with him telling me, hey, maybe don't use this one, or maybe this one falls a little bit outside the boundaries of what you should be absorbing into your body, or it's not, they're not using the right lenses to get to the right layer of your skin or deeper than that for the actual health benefits. That, I don't know, that doesn't sit right with me. I don't want to sell products I don't believe in personally. It's hard for me.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think there's kind of, for me, there's two dimensions to that. And I was helping people sell infrared saunas when they first came onto the market, and they were selling like absolute hotcakes. I mean, they still do, but like,
yeah,
it was really easy to sell them at one point, right? The marketing was easy. It was less competitive. And I didn't really think about this much then until I started, you know, over the last couple of years learning more about it. And people, so there's that ethical, so what you're saying is kind of like the moral, ethical, and how you feel about it, right? But there's an extra dimension to that, which I think, which is just from a legal perspective. People often ask me, like, if I'm high ticket dropshipping, can I get into legal troubles? Like, is there anything I can, like, could I get sued? Could I, anything like that? And the answer for me is usually, on my, based on my understanding, I'm not a lawyer, is this, the scenarios, if you're doing the right thing, are pretty small, right, where that can happen. I've never heard of a high ticket dropshipper be successfully sued from running their business, right? The one exception I would say to that is if you publish things on your website that are either claims related to health, finance, et cetera, wellness, or are just factually incorrect and they lead somebody to using a product in such a way as it causes harm to their personal or property, right? So these sort of products at the moment do fall a bit into the space of making claims that may at some point by a regulatory body pull you into hot water, right? If you're just parroting claims that you're going to improve somebody's health and you don't have the relevant disclaimers and all of that sort of thing, there are cases in history and different in different countries as well where people have been had penalties brought against them because they said, oh, use this product and your health will do this, right? I mean, there's tons of these. Products get pulled, people get penalized by, you know, in the US it'd be the FTC, in Australia it'd be the ACCC. And I just don't think it's worth, not to mention like the bad taste I think it puts in customers' mouths. If you give them a promise about their health, you send them a product they buy off you and then it doesn't do anywhere near that, like, you know, you're obviously not setting yourself up to ever have that person as a customer again. And I think some of the claims, definitely, I'm not going to pull the science apart, but in the red light, infrared spaces are very much not supported by any real science whatsoever.
I think there's another spot, you just reminded me of this, because I sold there, where it does show up, and that's with Big G. So Big G has a their own stance on news and fake news and what's true and what's not true, and you can agree or you can disagree with their stance, but our goal is to show up on Google, whether you're looking to rank via SEO or whether you're looking for your ads to show up. And when you get in these health and wellness spaces, often, not always, when you start using certain words or you start making any sort of claims, no matter what you're doing, you can't seem to rank well. Or personally, my site, even though we've pivoted away from this, I'm still suspended in ads for my logo and for misrepresentation and for other things. Is that because I was selling things, making claims? I have no idea. I've seen others in certain industries who definitely should be able to remarket their products, can't remarket their products because they fall into that health and wellness category. Mobility scooters is a good one. You can't run remarketing with mobility scooters. Like, you can go to Walmart and see someone on a mobility scooter. Is that influencing you in any way, shape, or form? I don't really understand the stance of Google, but I've seen that. That's one industry where it happens a lot, but I've seen it in other industries as well. And so, I try to stay away from the health and wellness stuff personally.
Yeah, I think that's the way I think about this is, I mean, yeah, you could probably sit there and argue that there's some fantastic opportunity in a space like this. And from some perspectives, there is. But really, on balance, if you take the hundreds and hundreds of, you know, viable and profitable high-ticket dropshipping markets out there, niches out there, like, to me, it's just not even worth the potential downsides here because I think there's just so many better ones that I wouldn't really be tempted into this. So I think on this one, for me, it's a bad niche.
Bad niche. I think for me, you know, just knowing I sold it, I don't think it's a good idea for you to sell it. I think if you're going to sell wellness products, this feels like it fits right in here. But, you know, for me, it's a no as well. So, yeah, it's tough. Oftentimes, we think, let's just sell one thing. This is not that one. Like, in America, you can sometimes get away with selling one product. Sometimes. It's pretty rare.
Thanks for listening to the Dropship Podcast. You can find all the show notes for this episode at dropshippodcast.com. And if you're ready to take the next step in your dropshipping journey, we invite you to join us inside Dropship Breakthrough, where John and I will walk you through step-by-step in starting your own high-ticket dropshipping e-commerce business. But that's not all. Dropship Breakthrough will also teach you everything you'll need to know to grow your business and take it to the next level. So head over to dropshipbreakthrough.com and sign up for our free training that will help you take the first steps towards building and growing your own profitable high-ticket dropshipping business. John and I both love business, think about it all the time, can't turn it off, and don't know why anyone would want to. And because of that, we started a second podcast where we can talk about everything we've ever wanted to talk about in business, not just dropshipping. We like talking about all things business. So if you want to hear John and I talk about all sorts of stuff, from camel meat dropshipping businesses to PDF dropshipping to a guy gambling $100 every single day on YouTube Shorts, to how OnlyFans taught us lessons in business. We're all over the place over there, but it's a really fun podcast. So if you're a podcast listener, you love John and I, head over to your podcast player of choice and look for The Low Bar Podcast. You'll see a blue image and you'll see a cartoon version of John and myself. And go back and start at episode one. I promise you will not regret this. This is one of the more fun projects that I have done recently. I know John's having fun too, so we'd love it if you joined us. Check out The Low Bar Podcast on YouTube or wherever you prefer to listen to podcasts.